Hey, kids, you're listening to a couple of annoyed grunt boys, and this is the 138th Simpsons Podcast. That's right, we're the Simpsons Podcast that discusses the beloved animated sitcom The Simpsons from seasons 11 and beyond, and the newest episodes when they air. Why do we do it this way? Well, Wheel of Entity. Well, an entity known as... Jesus.
Wheel of Entity? That sounds scary.
Well, an entity known as the Wheel of Random has trapped us and cursed us to only watch those episodes, because plenty of other podcasts out there have discussed the golden age, that being seasons 1 through 10. So we're tasked to see if any episodes from the latter seasons can match those golden age episodes. And I say we, I don't mean just me, because I'm just one annoyed grunt boy named Craig. With me, as always, is the other annoyed grunt boy named
Steve.
We pulled a boner last week.
We did pull a giant boner.
Yeah, we thought the new episode of The Simpsons was going to come out, and so we're now like scrambling today, like, there wasn't a new episode. What do we do? And so our pal Wheel of Random says, like, fine. It's his day off, too.
Yeah.
Like, Wheel of Random only works one day, and he's like, look, he's in, like, Tahiti this weekend.
He's going to hang with his metal kids.
The Wheel Housewives of Tahiti. Dumb. Sounds like a dad joke, right?
It does. No more of those. Yeah.
So he zoomed us in and gave us a suggestion. So that's why we're here doing this episode. Were you nervous that we lied to our audience, Steve?
I feel like we need to have a press conference and apologize. We can have our wives standing next to us, like, bravely holding our hands and being like, oh, he fucked up, but I'm going to stand by him. Because we did wrong, and I don't know how we recover from this, but we'll find a way. And with the Lord's help and our fans' forgiveness, we'll persevere. And it's going to be a new day. A wet day,
right?
But a new day.
But that being said, yes, the wettest story, Steve. Should we just get into this week's episode?
Yes, but before we do, let's go back in time, all the way back to April 23rd, 2006. What were you watching in the theaters then?
Well, the number one movie in the box office was...
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
No, sorry. Silent Night. Jesus, no.
Silent Hill.
Is that based off of, a video game?
Yeah, I think so. Some zombies or something?
Yeah.
It's very well regarded. I've never played it, but people seem to like it.
There was a movie?
Yeah.
Like 2006 is that kind of time in cinema where... I don't think 2006 was a great year in cinema.
I don't think so. I think that because it was before the superhero boom and after the blockbusters of the 90s. So they didn't know what people wanted from big movies.
Well, let's look here. 2006. Well, Poseidon, which we'll get into that later.
Mm-hmm.
The Secret came out in 2006.
Okay.
Based off the popular book, The Secret, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Prestige, was that a good movie? People like that one, right?
Yeah, that was the Christopher Nolan magic show.
Yeah. The Departed, Da Vinci Code.
I don't know if that was a hit. Yeah, people like it fine, but you're right. So you have things based on novels, based on comic, or based on video games, and they're just looking for some IP to make something out of, but they don't know exactly what they're doing.
Idiocracy came out in 2006.
Which is a classic film, but I feel like at the time was a bomb.
Because it showed what the world's going to be like only a decade later.
Right.
Oh, Casino Royale, the James Bond reboot came out. There you go.
That was huge. Yeah, that was a good movie.
Click. Everyone wants to do the Remote Control of Time movie. That came out.
Mm-hmm.
Mission Impossible 3. I should just look at the 2006 Oscars, right? Who won?
Mm-hmm. Is Mission Impossible 3, while you're looking that up, is that considered one of the good ones, or are they all pretty well regarded?
Yeah, I think that was the one that kind of brought back, or made it kind of fun, because the second one was kind of a mess.
That's right.
And J.J. Abrams directed it, that's right. So for 2006 films, the Academy Awards, right? The winner was Forest Whitaker in The Last King of Scotland.
Mm.
You had Alan Arkin for Little Miss Sunshine. So there you go, Little Miss Sunshine was in that. Helen Mirren, The Queen. Jennifer Hudson, Dreamgirls.
Oh, yes.
The Departed won for that year. You also had The Queen, Little Miss Sunshine, Letters from Iwo Jima, and Babel. That's all you had, 2006?
Yeah.
Was The Departed the last good Scorsese?
I wouldn't disagree with that, but I'm sure a lot of people on the internet would get mad at me. But yeah, I would say so.
Steve only likes The Irishman, and that's it.
I just wish it would have longer.
And then they looked more older because they were too young in that young de-aging.
It was too natural. I was confused.
Yeah. They walked around like they were 20-year-old men and not 80-year-old men.
Yeah, they walked so smoothly.
But Silent Hill's not on the Oscars list. Okay, Steve, we weren't Silent Hilling it up. Did we even look up the IMDb or the Rotten Tomatoes of Silent Hill? We looked it up with other movies. Let me look at the old Rotten Tomatoes real
quick. Yeah.
Steve, we have a whopping 33% tomato meter and then a 63 audience score.
Hmm.
Yeah.
For a video game-based movie, that seems about right because they never do that well.
Here's a quote from Paul Burns from Sydney Morning Herald. It just says, more deadly than silent.
Really? A fart joke? It stinks. Jay Sherman of the New York Times.
Yeah. All right, Steve. Hey, what was the number one song on the Billboard Hot 100?
Well, much like the producers of Silent Hill, the number one song on the Billboard Hot 100 is Bad Day by Daniel Pelcher.
Ah, that song was everywhere then, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, it was huge.
Because he had a bad day. Yeah, we're not going to sing.
Yeah.
What about the hot rock alternative?
Why, that was Know Your Enemy by Dia Verde, also known as Green Day.
I bet Daniel Powder is Green Day's enemy. You know what hurts the most, Steve?
What's that?
That was the number one country song.
Oh, okay.
What Hurts the Most by Rascal Flatts. Oh, those Rascal Flatts.
Oh, those Rascal Flatts.
Also sounds vaguely racist somehow.
It does, yeah. I don't like the word rascal. It feels offensive. But you know what?
Oh, rascal. What?
The number one song on the Dance Electric charts, Scream and Shout, which I feel like must have been on the charts forever, because I feel like we talk about it a lot.
Are you just copying and pasting, like, and not actually looking up the hot dance song?
No.
Because Scream and Shout and By Will, like, has this been on the number one song for decades now?
Yeah, I mean, right after the Chattanooga Chip Boogie by the Glenn Miller Orchestra. But yeah, that was number one.
All right. Well, you know what's the number one in our hearts, Steve?
What's that?
Well, I was going to say this episode, but I should really say our listeners.
That's true. They're number one.
So let's go to number two. This episode. It's the wettest stories ever told. Hey, the toilet, number two. You make wet stories there.
Sure. Ew. Oh, man, I had such a wet story last night. It was a saga.
That's enough. Sounds sexual. Because you said the wettest story last night, so we have a wet
dream. Oh, yeah.
They should have started this episode with the Simpsons in bed, like, sleeping, like, they're having wet dreams, because it's all about...
Ew.
Yeah.
It'd be a very different story.
Bart has this, and he wakes in the morning, he's like, Mom, I had my first wet dream. Oh, yeah, tell me about it. And he tells the story of the Mutiny on the Bounty.
Huh, okay, Bart.
And then Homer's like, I'll tell you my first wet dream, and then it becomes, like, very sexual. And then Disney's like, never buys The Simpsons after it.
Yeah. Whole world.
It's the most pornographic thing. Yeah. Okay. In an alternate universe, that exists somewhere, right?
I'm sure. Yeah.
But we're in the US universe, and we're talking the wettest stories ever told, in which The Simpsons' plan for a nice family outing turned into a disaster when they tried to salvage the night by telling different stories of disasters at sea.
Oh, boy.
All right, Steve. We're going to take a break, get all the giggles out, and come back and be serious. Is that okay?
Sounds good.
All right. Ships ahoy.
All aboard. Nope, that's trains.
Toot toot.
Room.
Titanic ourselves out. We'll be right back. And we're back. Today's episode is titled The Whitest Stories Ever Told. It's the 18th episode of the 17th season, originally aired April 23rd, 2006. It's episode 375, and the show's run. Your nerd code is HABF11, written by Jeff Westbrook, directed by Mike B. Anderson, and the showrunner is Al Jean.
Alrighty, Jeff Westbrook is a TV writer, best known for his work on The Simpsons and Futurama. He's also a big math guy. He was in a bit part in Master Commander, and so that makes him like three away from Kevin Bacon, like in the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. And also there's some mathematician who has a similar and more original 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, but that guy's name And he's also connected to that because when he was in school, he was really good at algorithms.
Well, Steve, you know that we don't do the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon anymore. We do the 6 degrees of The Simpsons.
Oh, that's right. Well, I mean, I'd say that he's like 0 degrees away from that then.
So he beats that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, take that. Now, where's Russell Crowe at the 6 degrees of The Simpsons? Master Commander himself.
Yeah. Well, he's one away because Jeff Westbrook was in Master Commander, so.
Well, there you go, Steve. One closer to The Simpsons, Russell Crowe. Which, you know, he'd make a good voice on The Simpsons, right?
Oh, yeah. He could throw phones at Homer.
We're probably missing someone like big that's been on the Simpsons. I mean, technically Russell Crowe has been on The Simpsons, right? Because Homer names one of his crows Russell Crowe. So maybe that's who we're talking about, right? Why are we talking about Master Commander? We haven't gone to that segment yet. Well, I know it's not Master Commander, yeah. But
Jeff Westbrook has written a number of things. He's written 23 episodes of The Simpsons. We have reviewed 11 of them. This is the second one he's ever written. Some that we have talked about are Kill Bill, Volume 1 and 2, No Loan Again Naturally, Pranks and Greens, The Deadliest Catch, Ned and Edna's Blend Agenda, The Wreck of a Relationship. It's got a wreck theme going. Let's Go Fly a Coot, The Road to Cincinnati, Girls Just Shauna Have Fun, Pin Pal, and from last season, Clown Be the Board of Education.
So what we're trying to say is Jeff Westbrook is very much like dad guy, like likes dad fiction.
Mm-hmm.
He probably has all the Master and Commander books, the old Hornblower series. He probably has like the Smithsonian Channel or A&E on, when it's like a historical. Like there's like that show that's always on, Aerial Disasters. He's probably watching that.
He lives in white New Balance shoes.
So all like the dad type jokes on The Simpsons are probably come from Jeff Westbrook?
Probably, yeah.
People know what I mean when I mean dad jokes, right?
Yeah. In fact, whenever I tell people that I'm not going to have children, they comment how good I am at dad jokes, and then it's a shame. They're like, so wasted a lot of good dad jokes.
Here's some dad jokes for you guys. Did you hear about the circus fire? It was intense. Do you know how to catch a squirrel? Climb a tree and act like a nut. See, you're not laughing anymore.
Oh, sorry.
I told my wife she could embrace her mistakes, so she gave me a hug.
See, I would punch that up and say, she hugged my children.
There you go. Hey, Steve, why don't eggs tell jokes?
I don't know.
They might crack up. These are pretty good, actually.
Yeah, I like these.
One more?
Sure, one more.
I might have to do two more.
Not a two more.
Okay. Why did the golfer bring two pairs of pants?
I don't know.
In case he got a hole in one.
I like that, actually.
How about this one? Two sheep walk into a bar.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay. I respect it.
It also could be two guys from Boston walk into a bar.
The wicked piss in here. Okay. Enough dad gags. Oh. Do we have a couch gag?
Yes, we do, Steve. And I'll tell you right now, it's The Simpsons or a puzzle piece. And so Homer inserts his head on Maggie's and vice versa and says, no, and realizes his error and then corrects it and chuckles to himself.
Classic.
Yeah. Nothing else.
That's it.
Yeah. No chalkboards. I mean, because we got to get into the story, right?
Mm-hmm.
The meat and the potatoes. You got three stories, Steve. Count them. Three. One, two, three.
One, two, three. Maybe instead of meat and potatoes, it's fish and potatoes.
Sounds yummy to me.
So yeah, this is a episode with three stories, much like your Treehouse of Horrors. But here's what's interesting is 6 weeks earlier, they had another one. They had the Simpsons Christmas stories. So season 17 was all about the three-story stories because they also had, of course, the Treehouse of Horrors. So that's three different episodes that are multiple story episodes. So they're going for a thing at the time.
I feel like I was probably annoyed by that.
Yes.
As a child. Because I want to see, you know, Bart chopping heads off of statues and Lisa being sad and then playing the blues and Homer doing something dumb and Marge vacuuming, you know?
Yeah.
Classic Simpsons.
Classic Simpsons.
Not these cockamamie stories.
No, I want to see Bart fighting space mutants and eating cupcakes.
That's the Simpsons that we know.
Yeah.
But hey, Steve, let's just get into it, okay? Our episode begins, as it always does, at the Frying Dutchman all-you-can-eat seafood restaurant. So the Simpsons family are sitting at a table, desperately waiting for their food to arrive. And Homer has become so bored waiting that he believes that he's figured out where the wallpaper pattern repeats. Did you ever have wallpaper as a kid and try to figure out where it repeats, or?
I don't think I had wallpaper.
Did you lick that paint?
I did. It was great.
Pretty sure it was lead paint, Steve.
I know, but I got to visit the Land of Dragons for a few minutes, so that was fun.
You did have wallpaper. It was dragons.
Oh, yeah.
It became wallpaper. He finds a pattern, and it's the ship's wheel, then the Popeye tattoo, which is just an anchor, which is funny that he refers to an anchor as a Popeye tattoo. Which would be interesting if he just went in and said the things that he saw and what that was in the tattoo parlor. I'm like, sure, no problem. And then he looks at it and he's like, what? Like, he got a Popeye. He's like, give me a Popeye tattoo. And he sees just Popeye.
Right. There's this man with the deformity.
Then there's Gilligan's hat, you know, from Gilligan's Island. Do we have to explain Gilligan's Island to people? I think they know where that is. Like, what age group doesn't know what Gilligan's Island is?
Us? No, I figure like people our age know.
Yeah, we watched it. I watched it in syndication all the time.
Yeah, me too. I loved it.
Well, I guess you could also call it the Sailor's Cap or a Dixie Cup.
Yeah.
And then we have a fish with boobs, which is a mermaid, or a Starbucks cup. And then back to ship's wheel. So you figured it out. That's the hard pattern. It's much like what man, woman...
Camera.
I forgot it.
Yeah, it's a hard test.
But then Lisa points out the swordfish, thereby ruining Homer's life work.
So Captain McAllister steps out of the kitchen to apologize for the delay, saying that the chef is having some problems with the evening special. So we then get a peek inside the kitchen where we do see that chef, and he's having a knife fight with an octopus who happens to have 8 blades, 1 in each tentacle. That's a very fun visual. The sea captain offers to send a busboy out to get something from a better dining establishment, and Marge suggests Red Lobster, but the sea captain sadly says, not that good. And we've discussed how of that tier of restaurants, you know, your fast casual dining, Red Lobster's okay.
Yeah. Give me the lobster
yeah.
of Reds. It's like that's like sort of for special occasions. Mm-hmm.
That's for an A-. So it'd be like,
so like, are they getting like Long John Silver's then?
Probably, yeah.
Which is kind of like what I would think the quality of the sea captain, the fine Dutchman's food.
Mm-hmm.
I just imagine it's not that good. Like, it's just your kind of crappy popcorn shrimp or your crappy clam strips, which is mostly bread and barely any clam.
Yeah, a lot of fried food. The fries are going to be kind of gummy.
Oh, yeah.
They have RC Cola.
Ooh, I do like the RC, though.
Royal Crown. It's fancy.
It reminds me of being an alcoholic. Because all the dive bars have RC Cola.
True.
But you know what's funny is, I guess if you consider, like, Simpsons lore, right?
Mm-hmm.
That, like... We know, because of the episode New Kid on the Block, that Marge is revealed to have a seafood allergy, you know, one that can most likely kill her.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lisa is obviously a vegetarian, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we know Bart is allergic to shrimp. So is it just Homer
Pretty
stuffing
much.
Himself?
Yeah, like Marge will have some sugar packets and, yeah, I don't know.
Lisa will have the salad.
Mm-hmm. Which you don't make friends with.
Was Bart going to have like a grilled salmon? No, he's not going to have a grilled salmon.
He's probably going to have a nice bowl of shorts.
Now, thinking about it, there's probably a kid's menu. And the kids, at those seafood places, you still get like a cheeseburger on the kid's menu or mac and cheese.
That's true. I guess Bart can get a burger, used to get mac and cheese.
That's what's happening. Yep. And then Marge will be like, can I get the kids mac and cheese too? Because that's all I want to eat. And she'll be like, they're like, no, you have to get the adult mac and cheese. And then when they get the adult mac and cheese, she only eats about as much as the kids. So like, why does she have to pay for the adult?
Just pay $10 extra for that.
Yeah, yeah. It's not fair.
No, not fair. So as they wait, Captain McAllister says that maybe an old sea yarn might help pass the time. So he puffs on his pipe and thinks for a moment before admitting that he doesn't know any old sea yarns. But luckily, Lisa does, about the most important sea voyage in American history, the journey of the Mayflower. Captain McAllister asks that it's the ship that brought the prostitutes to America. Lisa corrects him, saying that it was the Protestants, not the prostitutes. And the sea captain starkly asks, who's being naive now?
The Americans have ruined this country.
Mm-hmm.
The prostitutes. No, they make this country great.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Protestants, I mean. Yeah, yeah. The prostitutes make America great again. So Lisa begins her tale in 1620 in Plymouth Harbor, England, and Marge rushes her Puritan children. Bart and Lisa board the ship to flee England and its insufficiently puritanical ways. And so she asks the kids if they have their shipboard entertainment. So Bart offers his toy wood lump, which he just kicks down the cobblestone, calling it good jolly fun. And Marge is happy to say goodbye to the country and its drunken, decadent sinners. Just then, a certain familiar face rushes onto the ship and hides in a barrel.
Out of my way, you God-fearing buckleheads! Find me! Please, you gotta help me. If they find me, they'll kill me.
Has anyone seen this knave?
He's wanted for daring to question why we call this the Jacobean era when the king's name is James and not Jacob.
Mother, we must protect him. Look, he's praying.
Oh, Lord, please let the soldiers kill this family instead of me.
Noble sir, you may accompany us to America in my late husband's clothing.
And I will make thee a hat from construction paper.
So, thou art a widow, eh? Then the codpiece holds no terrors for thee.
Good sir, I do not approve of your fleshly gaze.
Wait a minute, if Bart and Lisa look like they do, and Homer's not the real dad, then who is? I mean, we'll see them later. It's always weird when they do the stories and somehow they're not related sometimes.
Yeah, it is really strange.
I like the Lisa saying, I'll cut you a new hat from construction paper. Just kind of like referencing us as the youth doing racist things like making Native American headdresses from construction paper and the pilgrim hats, and then doing a play or like a thing with kids dressed as, you know, Native Americans who clearly aren't.
Yeah.
Culture appropriation.
It's a horrible holiday.
I'm going to say they don't do that anymore. I mean, at least the schools in our area, I'm sure other parts of the country, they still do that kind of stuff.
Probably, yeah. I think they probably still do the hand turkeys, though.
I gotta do the hand turkeys.
They're the best.
It's like the kind of the coolest thing, like when you're a kid and you realize, like, I like drew something that looks like it's supposed to be, because, you know, most of the times it's a square and a triangle, right. It's a house, and then the one blue line that represents the sky.
Right, and a lollipop tree.
Yeah, and then a sun with a sun with a smiley face.
And sunglasses if it's cool. Homer imagines Marge in her petticoat, corset, and underskirt, which, you know, doesn't actually show anything. It's just the same. He pants with horny desire, and Marge scoffs at his advances. So as the ship leaves, the British wave them off, telling them goodbye and don't come back.
Learning about the pilgrims, like as a child, it was always like made it sound like the pilgrims were being prosecuted and they were the good guys, that sort of thing. But then if you look at an actual history, the Protestants, or these people left because England was becoming too liberal. Is that correct?
Yes, that is 100% true. And that we're all fed this line about how we needed religious freedom, which is just being a dick.
Yeah, because wasn't like England accepting in all the religions, like it all was kind of welcome at that time?
Yeah, I mean, probably not to the extent that it is today, but much more than a lot of other places at the time.
And so there was like, fine, let's go here. And, you know, that's why we're assholes.
Mm-hmm. We are assholes.
Do you have any bloodline to the Mayflower? Anyone from the...
Not that I'm directly aware of, but it's very possible because I do have a lot of British lineage. And I think we came over like in the 1700s to 1800s. So probably not directly, but I might have had relatives who left then. And what about yourself?
Oh, I do.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, hey,
good
here
English.
We are.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is a connection, I guess, within my genetic line. And I will show you my genetic line after the show.
Oh, boy. DNA.
Would you like to see my genes? Jesus. There's a dad joke. Jeff Westbrook's listening. I gotta use that joke.
Next season, we get like a whole ancestry episode just so we can do that joke.
Well, once they are on the high seas, the pilgrims begin to pray. Seeing this, Homer asks what kind of booze cruise this is and wondering where the hooch is also at. And so Flanders tells him that this is no place for drunkenness. Or colorful clothes, or dreaming, or poetry. He then says, if you write a sonnet, keep it under your bonnet. Before he can finish it, he realizes that he's made a poem, and then he lashes himself with a cat o' nine tail as a punishment. He just had that on him. It's also like a sex toy he uses with Goody Mod.
Yeah. More like Goody Mod.
I could see her dressed up as like an S&M person.
Yeah, she's definitely the dom. He would be the sub, I would assume.
Yeah, because she probably is like with like this huge dildos, like, now you know how I feel. Yeah, because he's got a huge hog.
Right. Oh, do you think she peds him?
He asked, yeah, because he probably feels bad, like, sticking that huge hog in her, like, causing her so much pain. She needs to reciprocate so he feels better for himself. You know. I mean, God blessed him down there.
Right.
And so that's why, like, Edna and him get together, because Edna's kind of freaky. Mm-hmm. She's down for that.
They both have the Holy Spirit.
Sorry, I was trying to do it. That didn't work. I can't do it. So he begs the Lord for forgiveness and to pour some salt onto his wounds for, you know, for good measure.
Yeah. Marge introduces Homer to the devout leader, Ned Flandish. So after saying, stupid Flandish, Homer invites Marge to a little Bible thumping in the crow's nest. He then learns Marge's name, which is Constance Prudence Chastity Goodfaith. But she adds that her friends call her Marge, as in Marge Obedience Temperance Sex Won't.
That's a pretty solid joke. I like that one.
Yeah. And of course, you know, if you name your daughter Obedience Temperance Sex Won't, she's going to be a stripper.
All right, I'll try it. Next on the stage, we got Obedience Temperance Sex Won't.
Pour some sugar on me. See, it works.
All right. Next on the stage, we got Constance Prudence Chastity Good Faith.
Nothing but a good time. Yeah, see?
Next up, we got Marge. See, it doesn't work.
No.
Why?
It just sounds like birds.
So, Mo pokes Homer with his walking stick, saying that Marge and him are engaged, adding that he didn't kill her husband just to, then he stops, and he says he didn't kill her husband. And Marge tells Mo that they're actually aren't engaged. It's really more of a amiable concordance. Ned hears this and is offended to hear such a language from a woman, and that he whips himself some more for thinking of Marge as a woman. So as the journey continues, Reverend Lovejoy tells the passengers to be grateful for what they have, while Homer wishes he had something else. Marge's love.
Lord, we thank you for the many ways you show your love. The sun which bakes our lips to the point of bleeding, and your hilarious idea to surround us with water that would kill us if we drank it.
Now I gotta warn you, even for this day and age, I'm considered a bad husband.
She's gonna marry him because he wears boots instead of blackening his feet.
Well, I'm sure the way to win her heart is to be fat and crying.
Why, the little... Uh-oh.
Oh, don't stop. You're choking him just the way his father used to. Good times. Ooh, perhaps that would make a good father.
May I escort you to the railing?
Oh, my God, look at that hand-on-hand action. If I don't do something, soon they'll be exchanging pleasantries.
So we see Bart's and Lisa's parent, or his father. And, yeah, it just looks like some guy with a mustache.
It looks like Scarlet Pimpernel.
Yeah, it does.
Like, wasn't there an episode with Scarlet Pimpernel?
Yeah, and it's kind of implied to be gay, I think.
Yeah, who does that look like? Hold on, I'm going to cast it. Let's go with a... young James Colburn, like 1960s James Colburn.
Oh, I could see that.
Okay. How about you? Who are you casting?
I'm going to say Paul Bettany.
All right. I like it.
Yeah.
Then you have your 00 degrees of Simpsons to Master and Commander. Is that what we're doing now?
Yeah, I think so. So Moe's fear of Marge and Homer sharing polite conversation comes true as Marge agrees that, yes, the weather is in fact nice. Seeing this sends Moe's humors from sanguine to bilious. He then faces a camera and breaks the fourth wall and tells the viewer that it's weird how they talk, isn't it? He then devises a most sneaky plan. He leads Homer below deck, informing him of a party he is throwing that evening to celebrate that only half the people on board have died so far. However, in reality, on the Mayflower, only two people died crossing from England to the US. It's actually kind of impressive.
Yeah, I got that good... blood.
Good job, Craig.
I did all that work.
Yeah, you got that good, pure blood.
Mm. Oh, Jesus. Yeah, only two people died. It's probably because they had God on their side, Steve.
Ah, yes. Good old G-Man himself.
So Ned sweeps the dead bodies of the ocean and also a cat. Poor cat.
Mm.
Homer sees some barrels of beer and says to Mo, I thought you guys didn't drink on the gay flower. That's Homer saying that. And Mo tells him to stop calling it that, and Homer responds with sassy whatever. Now, obviously, we don't do those kind of jokes anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Was that implied to just be like a comment on lazy joke writing? Because that's kind of how I feel like jokes of sitcoms in that era would go.
So are you saying that it's more of a commentary on jokes rather than actually being a joke That makes sense.
Because, I mean, even the whatever is not funny. So I wonder if at the time that was a funny joke. Or like now it's...
common joke, yeah. I can see what you're saying.
Yeah. Anyways, but, so Mo tells Homer that he was saving the booze to mess up the Indians. That's his words, not mine. But since they are now such good pals, he wanted Homer to have a taste. He then offers Homer a drinking game. So it's take a sip every time a wave hits the ship. And Homer plays along, taking deep drink after deep drink. So, Steve, on this podcast, we're going to do the same thing. I got you this keg of beer.
All right.
And every time one of us makes a mistake.
Oh, boy.
All right, we say, or, take a drink, okay?
All right, I'm going to die.
Just after this next segment.
Yeah.
Here's what we'll do. I'll count all your mistakes on paper, and then when you're done talking, I'll tell you how many mistakes you had, and then you can take the sips. Sound okay. Good?
That sounds good.
All right, let's keep going.
So, as a storm hits the Mayflower, Reverend Lovejoy thanks the Lord for the generous rain and abundant lightning. He's then struck by that abundant lightning, causing him to comment, obviously kissing your ass isn't getting me anywhere. So as the wave hits him, Ned states that the ship is way off course. He wonders where the crew is, and Ned shows him and Marge. So below deck, a drunken, shirtless Homer, along with Snake Jailbird, Otto, Willie, Cletus, and Barfly Larry, chant, sin, sin, sin.
I didn't hear you say.
You mean I didn't make a mistake?
Yeah, you see, the joke was, I went, as in, I drank all of your beer instead of telling you to drink it. Yeah, but that wasn't a funny joke, so I'm just going to say three. You did three ums.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry, there's also a zero after that three.
Mm. Okay, I'll start drinking that one.
Ned is stunned at what he sees. It's horseplay, roughhousing, and horse housing, which shows a horse poking out of a small house. I imagine Steve liked that joke.
A whole lot I did, yes.
Horse housing.
Look at Bunny.
Mo points to the knave responsible, Homer, who is chugging beer straight from the barrel, much like Steve.
Mm-hmm.
Lovejoy has heard all he needs to hear and puts Homer in stocks. So Marge is offended by his behavior, but the storm draws the attention to everyone on board.
Homer, I can't believe I was thinking of letting you touch my elbow through a cloth.
But baby, a man has needs.
Our captain's be head-bumped. Oh, I guess we'll never make it to the new world.
Oh, when we landed, I was gonna denounce my sister as a witch.
I keep telling you, the ability to add two-digit numbers is not witchcraft.
31 plus 43.
74.
Witch! 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 Witch!
People, this is madness! We can burn the witch later! Right now, I've gotta save this ship! Hey, I've been driving drunk since I was 12. But first, who's gonna help me pee?
They're looking at me because I have the key to the stocks.
And I think that joke is fine because I think it's our fault if we're implied to think that, oh, because Smithers is the gay person. And then it's just like, turns out, like, no, he just has the keys.
Yeah, that's possible.
Was Flanders out by this point?
I think so. Probably it's like 2006. I think if not like outwardly out, they weren't like hiding it as much as they once were. Yeah. But I also like that, first of all, that Homer's been drunk driving since he was 12. I don't know what he was drunk driving, though. I guess a horse and carriage.
Well, maybe he's driving ships. Is that what you call it, driving ships? Not
yeah, okay. Who knows? He was drunk. He can't trust a drunk guy.
Well, in those days, too, it's probably like, that's pretty late to be drunk at 12. Like, you're drinking pretty early in your youth. Like, did you ever ask your dad when he started drinking in the 1600s?
He said that after Lincoln died, he was depressed. It ruined his 6th birthday. And so he started drinking then.
Oh, so this is 200 years after. Okay.
Yeah, and he's not that old.
Oh, okay.
He was canonically now born in, let's say, 1859.
All right.
As the storm ravages, Homer steers the ship while chugging from a bottle, still locked up in those stocks. He tells Marge not to worry, saying that he'll see to it that all those fundamentalist Christians live to take over all of America by the 21st century. Good job, Homer.
So that's Simpsons predicting it again?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Because it's funny if you think about it, because, like, so 2006 was the George Bush era, and, like, the idea of fundamentalism was around. Again, not a political or religious podcast, but, like, we're like, oh my God, it's so scary. There's really Christian people. And now they're batshit insane. It's it's amazing how far we've come.
How far we'll stay here.
That's also true. And how far back we'll go. Back to the fun cartoon. Just said, Marge notices an albatross, which can lead them to safety. As they soar into clear skies, Homer takes a bite off the fried albatross, adding, "That bird did it all. Good guy." Ned has a new idea for the name for their new home, but Willie is a bit skeptical. But whatever they call it, they've arrived.
Hey, I just thought of a name for where we're going. New England.
Oh, that's real creative. What do you call your foot? New hand?
At least I'm pitching.
Mm-hmm. Land ho!
What did you call me?
Great Chief Wiggum, we could never have survived our first year in the New World without you. I almost regret what we Europeans are going to do to you.
What are you going to do?
Oh, give you the biggest slice of pumpkin pie. Also, we're going to take your land and wipe you out. Who wants whipped topping?
I really like the Willy, what do you call your foot, new hand? Solid joke.
Now, I heard Ned saying, what do you call your left foot? And he says, Italy. Now, hear this real quick.
What do you call your foot, new hand?
At least I'm pitching.
Because your foot looks like Italy, right? So listen real quick.
What do you call your foot, new hand?
At least I'm pitching.
Italy. Stein pitching. Italy. Stein pitching, right?
Well, yeah.
I just heard Italy's pitching.
Yeah. No, I get it. Yeah.
Okay. It's a dad joke. What do you call your left foot? Italy.
That's pretty good.
Okay.
At least I'm pitching.
I'm going to admit something stupid. It wasn't until this very moment that I realized how funny it is to have Chief Wiggum be a Native American, because he's a chief.
And Wig sounds like...
Wigwam.
Indigenous, yep.
Yeah, yeah. But I do like that, you know, Ned owns up to, you know, the Americans or the British colonists being awful.
Right. Well, let's go back to the modern time, Steve. Back at the Frying Dutchman. We got our first segment over and out.
10-4, good buddy.
That's what they would say, right? So the sea captain presents the Simpsons with the bill, but Lisa points out they haven't received their food yet. The sea captain vows to look into it, walking into the kitchen with a, "What the?" And then Marge asks if anyone else has the story, and both Bart and Homer say they do. And Marge says that Homer could tell the third story, and Bart could tell the second, because that's usually the weakest, which is a nice inside joke, breaking the fourth wall of this TV series, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's always the second segment. Always the weakest. Well, Bart's offended, but Marge states that she's just trying to take the pressure off of him. So Bart says that once he read a boring comic book about a ship called the Bounty, just like the paper towels, as Marge points out.
Bart's story of high sea adventure begins in England, 1789. Boys ready a ship as Bart tells Captain Bligh, as portrayed by Seymour Skinner, that there's a message from Admiral Nelson. Seymour thanks Mr. Christian, who's Bart, and looks through his telescope to a ship across the way. Nelson sends a message through nautical flags, and I actually checked, and this is, he's actually spelling it out. They did good, because that's what the Simpsons do. And it says, "Bly eats dolphin boogers." And then we hear Nelson let out a ha-ha. And Skinner admits that when you eat as much dolphin as he does, there's bound to be a booger or two in the mix.
This is very much the dad joke. I think this is probably Jeff Westbrook's claim to fame for this episode, or for his like dad joke nauticalness, is really wanting to do the story just so he could have an Admiral Nelson reference, so Admiral Nelson could be played by Nelson Munns.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Admiral Nelson was the admiral of the British Navy during like the Napoleonic Wars, right?
Yeah,
the good old days. So that's the famous Admiral Nelson, also famous for having a rum brand, Admiral Nelson's.
That I know. So they're on the high seas, and Captain Bligh addresses his crew, welcoming them to day 718 of their voyage.
Today's announcements. First of all, in an effort to save water, you will no longer be given any water. And because of a drawing of myself having romantic congress with a merman, I am dumping all your mail from home into the sea. And I can assure you there were cookies in there. Good cookies. The kind only a loving mother or Milhouse's father could make.
My father's alive?
No, he died while baking. It's all in the letter.
Maybe it was just the coroner ate the cookies and sent the letter.
P.S. I died while baking these.
Where's Luann in this?
I don't know.
I really like Skinner in this, is because this is like if Skinner was allowed to not have rules and just actually say it like it is and be a dick.
Yeah.
What a fun role Skinner took on for this episode, huh?
Yeah, he's probably excited for the chance that this is the part that is born to play.
So the crew of the boys begin to grow angry with their leader, and Jimbo states that he's getting pretty tired of that C-Wad. And Jimbo says that this is nothing like the recruiting brochure, which depicts a seaman and two comely lasses in his arms and offers a slogan, "The British Navy, less scurvy, more curvy." Curry thinks that, maybe it will come true in the last day. Willie warns Skinner that if he pushes the crew too far, there'll be a mutiny. And Skinner laughs, saying, "A mutiny on the Bounty?" He then asks Willie what he's been smoking. The Scotchman equips with saying, "Opium."
So the ship arrives on the island of Tahiti, where Homer and Marge, who are noticeably a little bit darker skinned, but I guess if the previous scene we had Chief Wiggum and the rest as Native Americans, I guess we're having fun with fantasy. Hopefully that's not offensive to people. But they welcome them to their tropical paradise. He invites the British to enjoy the local luaus, the lagoons, and the ladies, saying that what happens in Tahiti stays in Tahiti. That would be a joke tale. Maybe not this time, but I don't know. The Vegas stays in Vegas, I'm not a fan of. Marge adds that it's because they have no way of communicating with the outside world. She then asks if Robert Fulton has invented the steamboat yet, and Jimbo says, "Any day now," which impresses her.
Yeah, I agree. The joke jail for the West stays in Vegas. Definitely. Keep it there, in jail. No one can use it ever again.
When it's in jail, it stays in jail.
Jesus, you did it. You brought it back.
Oh.
So it would only take a few more years. In 1807 is when Robert Fulton invents that steamboat, right? So Marge only has a few more years to wait.
18 years?
Yeah, that's only a few, right?
Yeah, it's not bad.
She can go to school and graduate and buy porn and cigarettes. Oh, no, you can't buy cigarettes at 18 anymore.
You could back then, though.
Yeah, you definitely could. So the boys acclimate themselves to the island lifestyle by getting to know the local girls, eating the local food, and putting Ralph on a spit over the fire. He's fire now, Steve. Bart and Miles check out the Easter Island head statue known as Moi. One island is sculpting one of those heads when a man with a head like those statues swears that he doesn't look like that, telling the first person to make another. And the artist agrees, saying, "Yes, Lord Ugly Face." So later, a man juggles several sticks on fire as the crew watches intensively. He pleads with them to help him and not just sit there. So the boys head back to the ocean, receiving a warm goodbye and a cruel awakening of the work ahead on the ship.
Before we get to that clip, I just want to say that it felt like John Swartzwelder showed up just to write those two jokes of the Easter Island head joke and calling the guy Lord Ugly Face, and then the guy juggling the fire and begging for help. Those are some very, like, old-timey Schwarzwelder jokes that, I don't know, they're kind of fun.
Do you think it was Westbrook was, like, called up his old buddy and said, "Hey, can you give me a punch-up?" And he did it for, like, a pack of cigarettes and a cup of coffee.
Probably, yeah.
All right. Should we get to that clip, Steve?
I think so.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Thanks for staying with us. We appreciate you putting cloth over our women's boobies. You'll receive an updated bill after you leave. Bye-bye.
I wish we were back in Tahiti.
Why, yes, it was truly an unforgettable vacation. I order you to forget it. And while you're working, I want to hear a sea shanty in a round.
Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream.
Rounder, I hear edges.
Gently. Down the stream.
You're off key.
Merrily, merrily.
Make that song your own. You don't sound like you've ever been on a boat in your life. What the?
Captain, this is a mutiny.
Let's not be hasty there. What if I introduce a suggestion box?
We have a suggestion box. You made it from the head of the last guy who had a suggestion.
That image of Ralph nailed to the door. It's pretty gruesome.
You mean Martin. That wasn't Ralph.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Martin. Yeah, I know the Simpsons.
Yeah, and this is like what I was talking about, the Skinner just getting to be all out evil. It's very fun to me. Yeah, and this is also like another example I said in the beginning of the episode where like the Simpsons family isn't playing like each other's family members.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably one of the weirder stories, like, because Homer and Marge really aren't part of this.
Yeah.
Like Homer especially. You get kind of like the Lord of the Flies episode 2 vibes from this segment. Sure.
Yeah. It is a weird one, and I think Marge is right. I mean, this, I don't know, I'm not saying this isn't funny and it's not good, but it is maybe like, from a plot-wise, this might be the weakest story.
Ooh, big words, because I think this is probably Jeff's favorite story.
Sorry, Jeff. So Skinner stammers as the crew grows closer with their guns drawn. As the ship leaves Skinner and Willie on a lifeboat, Willie reminds Seymour that he warned them of a mutiny. Seymour tells Willie to just row and sing around while he does so. So Willie rows and sings Row, Row, Row Your Boat in a round with himself, which is quite impressive. Until he can't do it anymore, saying that he's just one man. Good work from Dan on that. So Skinner threatens him, saying that he'll sing or he'll mutiny, and that Willie is too much of a spineless coward to mutiny. We then find Willie paddling away on that lifeboat as Seymour rides a tortoise in the ocean, telling the tortoise to swim faster or else he'll be made into soup. Skinner then asks what else is going to do, go underwater, and so the tortoise does go underwater. And Skinner mocks the amphibian, saying, "You call this deep?" Which is also what Ned says to Maud.
I was going to say that. That's how the book, you know, the bounty ended, right? And like how it actually ended in real life time.
Yes.
It's based off a real thing.
Yeah.
Did you read the comic book?
No, it was that Bart did. Boring. There's no Iron Man in it.
You could draw an Iron Man if you want to. It's just a comic book.
That's true.
I mean, that's a good idea. I'm going to take like an old comic book and then just add a new character to it that was never there. Like it'll be called Third Wheel Man or something. So you just take like an old Superman comic book and then put like Third Wheel Man on top of it. And so it's just like that guy that's always been, you know, you're hanging around. You've always been this person. Like sometimes you say something, but people ignore you.
Yeah. Boy, I wish Clark and Jimmy would talk to me.
Lois, I really think Clark is Superman.
Like it's just a pair of glasses. It's pretty obvious.
It's a lot of fun. Like there's always Batman, Robin, and then Third Wheel Man. Like so he's like punching criminals and never gets any recognition.
Poor guy.
Yeah, that's gonna be a great comic book. It's like that. It's like the reverse of Garfield minus Garfield.
Right.
Maybe we'll start with like the smaller comics, just the strips. We'll do Garfield minus Garfield plus Invisible Man. What do they call him? Third Wheel Man.
Yes. Hey, John, I really think you should see some mental health.
He just ignores him. Okay, so take the comic strip, Garfield minus one, and then put the new character in there.
Mm-hmm.
John still ignores. Okay, I like this.
Yeah, and then we can add Godzilla minus one as well.
Oh, yeah. This would be great. Well, back on the bounty, new Captain Bard announces that their next stop will be Tahiti. He then declares that they will remove all evidence of their previous regime, starting by this stupid steering wheel, which Bart just pulls off and throws into the deep blue sea. This causes the ship to wildly rock back and forth, and then later Bart tells his crew that he knows that they had their doubts, but he introduces them to the most beautiful women in the world.
Oh.
So the camera zooms out to show an icy expanse, and as Kearney points out, those beautiful women are actually penguins, not the hockey team, Steve, but the actual penguins. Yeah. There's no Sidney Crosby out there.
Duh.
Oh, Sidney Crosby and Sidney Sweeney. They could be the Sidneys.
That's the hot couples.
One's hot, one's cold.
Oh.
Because he's always playing on ice hockey, Steve.
It's true.
I'm pretty sure Sidney Crosby's married.
I would imagine so.
To Denise Crosby, Tasha Yar from Star Trek The Next Generation.
May she rest in peace.
The character, not the actress. The actress is alive.
Okay.
Bart reasons with his men, saying that they'll discover the North Pole, but it's once again corrected, as Shivering Jimbo says, is actually the South Pole. And Bart owns up to his air, saying, "Boy, do I suck." And that's the end of the second segment, Steve. Start us off with the third and final segment.
Alrighty, so the tables at the Flying Dutchman have all cleared out, except for one, where the weary Simpsons family sits. Lisa begins to wonder if the sea captain's ever coming back, but Bart points out that he's outside playing basketball. And so we see Captain McAllister dunking on one of his employees, saying, "In your face, Julio." And then he sees the Simpsons looking at him and states that he'll be fetching their food right away. before inviting his staff to play 6 more games.
There's just something kind of funny about the sea captain playing basketball.
It is, yeah. And he's like, got his shirt off because, like, yeah. I think it's just versus skins, but he's the only one playing. So he's playing against 3 other employees. He must got skills. I mean,
he says shirts versus skins. That's bringing back horrible memories.
Yeah, not good.
Especially, like, you know, when, like, a ball hits your nipple. That's not fun.
Nope.
Steve, do you like balls hitting nipples?
No. Depends on whose balls, whose nipples.
Steve, I have nipples. Can you milk me? So luckily Homer has a tale of a moist adventure to fill the time. Yeah, and distract them from their hunger. And it takes place in the dark time for mankind, when madness and ignorance ruled, the 1970s. So we go to New Year's Eve on the luxury ship, the Neptune, where people disco dance as the Hughes Corporation's Don't Rock the Boat plays. Just then, someone has a very important announcement.
Disco Stu has some troubling news. The ship's doctor has reported an outbreak of disco fever. The only cure is to do a little dance, make a little love, get down tonight.
Wait a minute, what was the second one?
And now let's welcome the Leroy Neiman of Seaman, your captain, Montgomery Bird.
10-4, good buddy.
I'm Chevy Chase and you're not.
Really, Stargell?
Yes, welcome to the maiden voyage of the Neptune, the world's most unflippable luxury liner. Help yourselves to some pineapple upside-down cake and apple turnovers. And you'll all be getting free hats, so make sure to give us your cap size.
The pineapple upside-down cake and the cap size. Just, that's quality right there. That's a good joke.
Because it's foreshadowing, Steve, for the ship to capsize.
That's right. A lot of 70s references there.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say I really liked when they were doing the catchphrase goodbyes. It was just, I'm Chevy Chase and you're not.
And for those of you who don't know, Leroy Neiman was an American artist known for his brightly colored expressionist paintings that he would do of various athletes, actors, and famous people. Like, he did one of Rocky, for instance, and Muhammad Ali.
Is it weird that the 70s, like, the style and aesthetic of the 70s was just like a decade, and then it just changed, like, overnight? It feels like it just changed, like, as soon as it turned 1980. Or is this because we're so used to, like, seen in the aesthetics of 70s and 80s as one thing? But if you remember, because kind of like growing up, like, our housing was like a mixture of 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have like that straight up 70s leisure suit look. Like, that didn't last that long. It's kind of interesting how, like,
you're
like,
right.
did 10 years ago seem different than 10 years later?
Yeah, definitely. Like, now, like, the 2000s, all, man, maybe I'm wrong because I'm old, but like, the 2000s to me all feel like they look basically the same. I know that, like, trends come and go, but for the most part, it all looks the same. But you're right. Like, the 60s were like kind of the hippie vibe, and the 80s were like a techno-y, like, you know, a modernist bit of vibe, like a lot of neon colors, a lot of metal. But the 70s were kind of unique because it was a lot of, like you say, leisure suits, a lot of like white on wood, a lot of gold paneling. It's its own unique thing that's kind of like elegant, but crass as well. Like, it's gaudy but trying to be fancy, and it did just kind of blip out in my mind. So it is interesting.
Like, I was just thinking, the Brady Bunch is kind of that aesthetic of the 70s, right?
Mm-hmm.
The TV show The Brady Bunch, and then when they did the movie in the 90s, you know, the remake movie with Shelley Long and Gary Cole,
mm-hmm.
that was like only what, like 15 years since like The Brady Bunch aired.
Yeah.
Like, what's our equivalent to that now, like, making fun of early 2000s, which is pretty much what the same, like, would it just be guys with frosted tips?
Yeah, like, 2009, like, what is that, like, maybe the double polo trend?
Yeah, there we go. I still have clothes from 2009 that I still wear, so.
Right, right.
I mean, earlier than that, too, I think.
Mm-hmm.
This underwear still says, happy 5th birthday, Craig.
And somehow it's looser than it was then.
Yeah. And so we go to this segment. It's a parody of the Poseidon Adventure. Steve, did you ever see the Poseidon Adventure?
I didn't. I've seen bits and pieces of it on, like, cable or, like, on TV late at night, but I've never, like, sat down and watched it.
Yeah, I've never seen it. It's one of those, like, I should watch.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing from the 70s, like those disaster movies.
Yeah.
Did you know there was a Poseidon Adventure remake? It was just called Poseidon at this time. But a commercial for it aired during this episode.
It's funny how poorly that movie did. Like it had, because it came out on May 6th, so a few weeks after this episode premiered. And it had like Kurt Russell, Josh Lucas, Richard Dreyfuss, Emmy Rossum. And yeah, I don't feel like it was a hit.
Yeah. Do you think Richard Dreyfuss made a Jaws reference in the remake?
Probably, yeah. Like, this boat is the right size. We don't need a bigger one.
Now, could we do the first Poseidon Adventure film on our podcast?
That's a good question.
Well, the original movie had Roddy McDowall. Didn't Roddy McDowall do a voice on The Simpsons?
I think he was referenced.
Okay, how about Liz? Leslie Nielsen. Did he ever do a voice on The Simpsons?
No.
Okay, duh. Here it is. Ernest Borgnine was in the original Poseidon Adventure, so there's a connection. So we could watch the original Poseidon Adventure.
Parodying the movie that he was that movie. Because he was in Boy Scouts in the Hood.
Yeah.
And they're on the raft, and that's the whole point. That's why he was on there.
Okay.
We're an idiot.
Let's finish this episode up, all right?
Alrighty, so Marge looks around and comments that the ship is full of fascinating cross-section of humanity. First, she points out the lonely but lovable loser, Comic Book Guy. So we see Comic Book Guy, a.k.a. Jeff Albertson, as he says hello to his Charlie's Angels action figures, saying that their mission involves going undercover at a wet t-shirt contest. So he then pours a glass of water over the toys, hoping their little plastic nippies will get as erect as his little penis. Marge remarks that he may not be so lovable. Lisa then notices another pair of passengers taking the journey of a lifetime.
And you've got the elderly Jewish couple making their first trip to Israel.
Our son Shlomo is working on a kibbutz in Haifa. We're schlepping him some kreplach.
They're Jewish, all right.
What's our backstory? What's our backstory?
We're the band. And we're on! I think we're heading for disaster. And most of you will not be saved. Unless the captain is attentive. We'll all be crushed by a huge wave.
I love the sea, Smithers. No earthquakes, towering infernos, China syndromes, apple dumpling gangs.
So there was Burns talking about all the 70s disaster films. Mm-hmm. Also, like, adding the apple dumpling gang, though. And then Lisa's scene of, like, what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's very funny.
Also, I want to ask, I can't find it online, but old Jewish woman.
Is that just a new character for this?
I think segment? So.
Yeah.
Because we never really see old Jewish man have a partner. And obviously, you know, they need somebody for him to be with. And, I thought it was fun.
Was that just one of the women that does voices on the Simpsons? Like, wasn't anyone famous doing the old Jewish woman?
I think it was Tress.
It was Tress. It's funny because when she spoke, and even though the caricature of old Jewish woman reminds me of Shirley Maisel, from the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, the mother-in-law.
Oh, yeah, I could definitely see that.
Not her mom, but Joel Maisel, because that's, you know, his name. Carolyn Aaron, that's her name. Okay.
Yeah.
Kevin Pollak's wife.
Right, right.
On the show. Anyways, that's who it reminded me of. For those who've seen the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
So I just found it. Old Jewish man's first wife is her canonical name, and she's appeared in two episodes. This one and another one that we reviewed way back in the day. Love is in the NTO2R CO2NEHECH4.
Yeah.
She was a vision of his wife, where she was much younger. Because that was part of the episode, I think, is people were having hallucinations because of drug Valentine's Day candy.
So that could be why old Jewish man is in the retirement home, probably lost his wife and lived in there. All right. Well, just then a huge wave hits the ship, causing it to tip. People are flung about. Homer slips, but is stopped by a table as Afro falls off, causing him to shout, "My wig, my natural hair," as Mario falls through the air, a steaming pot floats above him as he comments, "What a time to be carrying the soup." It's just this, the sadness, you know, when that bowling suit just goes right on his body after he lands, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be crushed. Your legs will be crushed and you'll be burned.
Yeah. It's a lose-lose.
Yeah. So as Bart floats midair, he loves that there's like no gravity until he falls on the pile of people.
So the ship is upside down in the water as people fall to the ceiling. Krusty yells to a schmuck to get off of him, but then he discovers that that schmuck is actually his severed lower half of his body. So as he dies, he comments that he's going out with a sight gag, which is nice. Homer hangs onto that table while grasping a big cake. He has the idea of having the cake climb into his mouth for safety, but he drops dessert before he can implement his grand plan.
Good stuff there. Homer begins to lose his grip. He begs Flanders to catch him. Ned says a prayer, saying, "Lord, with you watching over me, I shall feel no pain." And Homer comes crashing down, grabbing Ned's stash and stretching it out several feet. And yes, my face began to hurt seeing that.
I can imagine, yeah. I've never had a mustache and I felt it.
That's a new challenge, Steve. In 2024, you're going to grow a mustache and that's it.
Okay.
Flanders screams in pain and walks away, accepting his new Fu Manchu. And Homer is ready to celebrate, but other people on board are about to be more worried about their safety.
Woohoo! It's almost New Year's! 10, 9, 8...
Homer, the ship's upside down and hundreds of people are dead!
3, 2, 1, Happy New Year! My resolution is to be more fun.
Attention, everyone. I've spent the entire cruise reading these maintenance brochures because as a lonely single woman, I've had nothing better to do.
Aww.
Oz are cheap. I'm looking for some action. I thought so. It says here we should head upwards towards the hull before the ocean starts filling the ship.
Don't listen to her. She'll get us all killed. The safest thing to do is to resume our normal activities. Now, where is the rumba instructor?
Wiggum does find that rumba instructor, or at least their legs, sticking out of the mouth of a shark. Feels very 70s SNL. Clancy assumes that the flailing limbs are giving dance instructions, so he follows along, inviting others to do the same.
It does look like Bruce the Shark from Jaws.
It does, yeah.
The Simpsons, Selma, Sideshow Mel, and the old Jewish couple walk the ship looking for safety. So they reach a fork in the path, and Homer examines his options. One hallway is full of rushing water, another ablazing in flames, and then the third has three bloodthirsty tigers. Like, the flames was funny enough, but yeah. And the tigers. Poor tigers. They're just trying to probably get out, too.
Yeah. Like, why are we on the ship? We don't like boats.
Yeah.
So Marge asks her husband what they should do, but Homer needs a moment in the bathroom. And Marge opens the door to find Homer sitting on the toilet, reading the newspaper, upside down. He says that he has great ass suction, and then requests some privacy, and then we hear that he, you know, lost his keys as they probably fell in the toilet. How's your ass suction?
It's wonderful, Steve. Thanks for asking.
Of course.
Is this how Spider-Man also uses the restroom? Is he?
That is a great power.
Yeah. Well, several people climb a ladder to a hatch, and Lenny tells the others, whatever they do, don't look down or up. He then breathes heavily with exhaustion, saying that he can't do it anymore. It's too confusing. And then he lets go of the ladder and falls towards the water below or above. And then Carl just says, that is not that confusing. Great scene.
Yeah. So Lisa discovers a hatchway, but it's jammed. So Sideshow Mel steps up, offering to use his Swiss Army bone. Using the screw tool of his bone, he pops the vent and the survivors crawl through. Checking her map, Lisa sees that the engine room is just through a flooded area. Lisa has a plan, but she just needs a volunteer.
Somebody has to take the rope, swim through to the other side, and tie it off so we can use it as an underwater guideline.
Stand aside. I shall perform the necessary heroics. Thank you.
You?
Yes. All I need is some inspirational music.
When she passed away, I cried and cried all day, alone again.
All right, I can see this is all up to me. Swim, Fatty, swim!
Oh, homie, you did it!
So comic book guy swims through the water, reaching the engine room. He then ties the rope to a girder and goes back underwater, enjoying a chicken drumstick before returning to the rest of the people. Could you do that? Could you just, like, be underwater and just, like, take a bite of food?
I don't think I could.
No, I'd drown, too, because you're just sucking all that water.
Mm-hmm.
He tells Homer and the rest that he's tied it off, and They're going to make it. As he has a heart attack, he asks that they tell the world that he saved them all. And Homer retorts, "Don't tell me what to do."
Homer, Marge, and the rest find safe refuge when Sychomel hears knocking on metal. He thinks they're saved, but then his hair catches fire. Someone on the other side is using a blowtorch to create a hole in the ship. Mel isn't sure which pains him more, the flame or the irony. And so he passes out, saying to the audience, "Can you believe it's the irony?"
Another fourth wall break in this episode, right?
Yeah, quite a few.
Yeah. So the passengers board a Coast Guard rescue ship, and Homer sees that the Neptune is upside down. Nearby, a mist clears to reveal an old ship. It's the Mutiny, and the crew is still on board, but now they appear to be skeletons. So Skull Bart asks if they know the way to Tahiti, and Dolph mocks him, saying that he sailed into someone else's tale of the sea, and Bart says that at least he's not gay for skeleton Kearney, but Jimbo argues that the ribs just got tangled 75 years ago, and that's not gay. This is probably a joke that is not good.
Yeah, this is probably the worst one.
I agree. Well, Bart says, sure, you keep believing that. And that's the episode, Steve. Okay, we did it. We adventured on to three stories. We should have done this on a boat, this podcast. Why didn't we?
We should have, yeah.
Well, fans out there, if you want to donate a boat to us, just email us at 13simpsons at gmail.com, subject line boat, and then free, because we're not paying for this.
Right. I want a free boat.
Yeah. All right. Steve, let's look up the boats that we want and then come back and discuss the rest of the episode.
Sounds good.
All right. We'll be right back. And we're back. All right, Steve, let's finish up this week's episode, The Whitest Stories Ever Told. We'll talk about some of our favorite jokes, give a little review, find out what we're watching next week before we do all that. Steve, we'd like to give a gift. And since there's three stories, I'm going to give you three gifts. All right. Whoa. First off, you said you never had wallpaper, so I got you this roll of wallpaper that they use at the Flying Dutchman. So you can see where it repeats, okay?
Ooh, fish with boobs.
I know we're going to put that wallpaper. Probably in your bedroom.
Yeah.
Also, a keg of beer, an old wooden barrel, that the same recipe that the Puritans would use.
Puritan Stralum.
And then my last gift, let's go to heaven and give you a ticket on a cruise ship on New Year's Eve in the 70s.
Yay. Probably be cocaine.
Lots of cocaine.
I got you some gifts as well. I know you like to keep yourself occupied with some entertainment, you know? So I got you a toy wood lump. Play with to your heart's content. Also, I know you get hungry sometimes and you don't like to wait around, so I got you a gift certificate to Red Lobster.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Especially good for Shrimp Fest, which always seems to be happening.
Yeah.
It seems to come earlier and earlier every year.
It's always funny, too, when like Red Lobster has Lobster Fest. Like, shouldn't every day be Lobster Fest?
Yeah, I mean, that's what they're there for.
They don't have like Hamburger Fest and McDonald's. There's always hamburgers.
But I also got you a drawing of you making out with a merman, just for fun.
So gay of you.
I know, but that's what this episode's all about. I guess.
Back when you could just say something's gay and I got a laugh, right?
Mm-hmm. As lazy as it is offensive.
Which is our slogan to this podcast. Lazy and offensive. The Noy Crab Boys.
That's a t-shirt.
It really is. I love that. I think that should be our slogan from now on.
Lazy and offensive.
It also could be like our autobiography. All right, Steve. What made you laugh from this episode?
There were some solid jokes in here. Taking the first segment, the horse housing is really funny. That was really solid. Lord Uglyface from the second segment. And then Burns talking about the capsize. Just a lot of dumb visual gags that I really thought were a good time. Marge's name of Marge Obedience Temperance Sex Won't made me laugh. Bart calling Lisa a witch because she can add two numbers. Solid. But if I had to give it MDJ, I think I'm going to give it to Mr. Burns as the captain of the Neptune. Just because he's a lot of fun. What were your thoughts, Craig?
Yeah, no, my favorite bits, of course, were the Marge's name and then the horse. That bit was great, like you said. Lenny at the end, you know, the there's always in those movies of a character's like, I can't make it, I can't push forward, and then, you know, they either give up or someone, you know, encourages them to, but like, just the whole fact that he was, I don't understand, up or down, down or up, it's so confusing. That's a very funny bit to me. As you said, Mr. Burns is the captain of the Neptune, but I liked, my other captain that I like was Skinner, just for his sheer assholery, horrible captain. Maybe he's my MVJ, but also from that segment, I do like the Lord Nelson being Nelson Muntz. Very fun nautical joke, so that's good there. So, yeah, I'm going to give it to Skinner.
Nice, I like that.
What'd you think of the episode in general, Steve? Would you give us a ranking? Do you recommend it?
I didn't watch this episode when it first came out, but I'm sure if I did, I'd be really annoyed with it just because it doesn't, like, encapture the spirit of The Simpsons, at least what I thought at the time. But I don't know. It was kind of a fun time. Like, all three stories were pretty solid. None of them really dragged. There were funny jokes in all of them, and there is some, you know, problematic stuff, I think, but that was kind of more of the time rather than of the show itself. I don't know if it excuses it, but it kind of explains that a little bit. I think that this is a pretty fun time. Do you compare it to other three stories episodes, like, you know, The Simpsons Tall Tales or, you know, the other ones? If that's the case, then I think it ranks pretty high. I mean, it's not as good as like a Treehouse of Horror, but it's still pretty good, and I had no problem with it. It's a weird concept to think about them sitting in the writer's room being like, okay, what are we going to do this week? Let's do, well, a few weeks ago we did Simpsons Christmas Story. Let's do another stories episode. What are we going to do? Oh, there's a glass of water. Let's do ones about wet things. It's a wacky idea, but I think somehow it works. So I'm going to say that if I had to give it a ranking, The Poseidon Adventure has a score of 80 on the Rotten Tomatoes website. So out of 80, I'm going to give this one a 69.
Nice. Hey, so that's a good score, right?
Yeah, I think so. I would say this is a watch. I don't know what the, like, scenario is that you're in that you're just like, oh, I need to watch this episode. But if you just want to laugh and you're not sure what to put on, this could be a fun one. But I'm curious to hear your thoughts, Craig.
During this time, do you think Al Jean, and he was show writing this, of course, but, like, do you think there was someone at the top to be like, look, The Simpsons Treehouse of Horror is, like, or it was highest rated once. People love those episodes. Can you just do a lot of anthology episodes? And so maybe they're, like, forced to, like, do all of these anthology episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, as a kid, I don't like the anthology kind of stuff. I'm going to save that for Treehouse of Horror. That's it. I don't need them in my regular Simpsons run. And then this one, yeah, like, what were they thinking? Like, you know, do nautical theme ones? I mean, it's a good concept. I'm not putting it down, but it's just...
Yeah, like, I don't have any problem with it. It's just a weird idea.
Yeah. Yeah, because you don't really see other shows do something in this vein. Is it because the writers are all just, like, dads reading these nautical books? Like, can we just do something on the boats? We just want to do something about boats. Why do us men like boats? I don't get it.
Men and seamen are connected.
Yeah. With that being said, I did enjoy it, but I definitely don't know if it ranks up there with some of the other anthologies or treehouses. Definitely not like Thanksgiving of Horror, which is kind of tangentially.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with this episode. And like Simpsons Bible Stories, which I know we can't review it on this podcast,
mm-hmm.
but I have rewatched it recently, and I think that one might be a little bit better than this.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. The gay jokes, I think, are obviously dated and not funny. It's weird watching it now, like, oh, we thought this was funny, not realizing, like, this is super offensive. Like,
right.
Just as dumb humans, you know, like, we're assuming something's cool, which it's not.
Yeah.
If I had to rank the segments, was the Bart segment in the middle of the weakest for you, like they said?
I think from a plot perspective, yes. But from an overall enjoyment, I think that actually, for me, I think it gets progressively better. Like, I would almost argue that the Mayflower one was probably the weakest for me.
So it's 3-2-1 is your 1-2-3. Yeah, I agree. That's how I'm kind of feeling. And then my only complaint, and I know they don't really do this, but sometimes they do a wraparound. Like, I would like to know what, when the stories are done, like, why wasn't there a post-credit with the Simpsons finishing up their meal at the Fran Dutchman?
In the Blunders section of many webs of the Simpsons Wiki, they're like, it's never revealed if the Simpsons got their food.
Oh, no.
So people were worried about that, yeah.
Is this maybe how the episode ends? Like, it should have ended with Homer still at the restaurant and puts in Don't Stop Believing on the jukebox, and then That's how The Simpsons ends?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so if I had to give this episode a ranking, look, you said in the episode that only like two people died in the Mayflower. Steve, all you know is actually five.
Wow. More have died since that was written.
Yeah, they're finally gone, Steve. So there's like in Provincetown, there's a little statue, like a little tombstone, a memorial for those five that lost the sea. We lost William Button, Edward Thomas, Jasper Moore, Dorothy Bradford, and James Chilton, R.I.P.
Hmm.
Not too far apart from each other. You had William on November 16th, 1620. You had Edward Thomas on December 14th. Then you had Jasper Moore on the 16th. And then the next day was Dorothy. And the day after that was James.
Whoa.
See, that's the original, three celebrities dying within each other. That was the original one.
You think on the ship they're like, all right, well, two have died. Who's next?
So William Button was the first one to die and James was the last. So if I were to rank this episode, I'd probably give it a Jasper Moore.
Tough but fair. But
tell us what you guys think about this episode. And we're going to go ahead and mosey on over to the Not Wheel of Random. This was our random episode that we had to throw together.
True.
But this time, Steve, I can't say guess the episode because we already know what it's going to be. This is the episode that we thought we were going to review this week but didn't. And that's, of course, Clan of the Cave Mom, Season 35, Episode 13, which will definitely air this week, right? Definitely, Steve?
Definitely.
Okay. So a parity disagreement between Marge and Lynn Van Houten escalates into a life or death struggle for survival. All right, Steve, I think it's time we pull our old anchor up and set sail to home.
All righty. All aboard the USS Annoyed Grunt Boy.
But contact us while we're out on the high seas. You could do that by contacting us on social media, like Instagram at 138Simpsons or YouTube at 138Simpsons, or that old pesky email at 138Simpsons@gmail.com.
And hey, if you're so kind, go to your favorite podcatching app and leave us 5 stars or the equivalent and write us a real review. But you don't need to write a real review. It can be a fake review just talking about what high sea adventure you would like to have. And hey, while you're there, if you're on Apple Podcast or whatever, click on the microphone, leave us a voicemail, ask us a question, do an impression, or just tell us your deep thoughts about the land of Tahiti.
Or a dad joke.
Yeah, I'd love to hear a dad joke.
And hey, if you don't want to do all that typing, you can call us. Just go through the podcasting app, scroll down to the bottom, and it says leave a voicemail. You click on that, and it rings, and then you talk, and then it sends, and then we hear. That's how that works. So for this week, I've been Annoyed Grunt Boy Craig.
And I've been Annoyed Grunt Boy Steve.
And remember, the way to win her heart is to be fat and cry.
What do you call your foot? New hand?
At least I'm pitching.
We appreciate you putting cloth over our women's boobies.